Any day now, the world's top big wave surfers will descend on Half Moon Bay in Northern California, one of the most dangerous big wave spots in the world. They'll compete in the famous Mavericks Challenge, and for the first time, women will compete. They almost did last year. That contest was canceled because of financial problems. This year, there's new management, the World Surf League, and six women who will paddle the half mile out, including Bianca Valenti, co-founder of the Committee for Equity in Women's Surfing, which waged this fight to catch these big waves. Bianca, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, listen, I'm such a fan of the sport. And how are you feeling? What's the anticipation of this? I guess they tell you when the waves are ready, but what's the anticipation?
Yeah, I'm so really excited right now. We see a couple of huge storms starting to develop in the Northern Hemisphere. So could be happening if all the conditions hold together. It could be happening in the next couple of weeks. Yeah.
You're just ready to go. Well, tell us more about this spot. First of all, you know, people might be surprised to hear this. They think Australia or Hawaii for these huge wave spots. Tell us more about this spot.
Yeah. So Mavericks has often been called the Mount Everest of big waves. Just south of San Francisco, 20 minutes south, you can get waves that start at 15 feet and go anywhere up to 100 has been recorded before. So it's a pretty phenomenal expression of energy and what's possible in nature.
And pretty dangerous. It's rock-laden at the bottom. There's, what's it called, the Boneyards?
It's got a big rock reef. It's a three-tiered reef, and it goes for like about 50 yards on each section. Mm-hmm. It's pretty deep. It's like 35 feet deep. But when you wipe out, this water is really, really thick and heavy. And it can send you straight down to the bottom.
Right. And your death. You know, the Hawaiian champion, Mark Fu, drowned. You know, he got trapped in those rocks, right? In 1994.
Yeah, no. I mean, surfing Mavericks is no joke. Everyone who surfs out there puts in a lot of work. And we're all watching out for each other. But my philosophy is safety first, last, and always.
Talk a little bit about the evolution here and how women became involved. Because you're talking to someone, we used to be so in love with the surfers at Gilgo Beach and Ditch Plains on Long Island, but that meant that you watched them. You didn't, you know, women didn't surf back then, and it's been a hard fight to get into the big waves. The Titans of Mavericks was the first name for this competition. It was called Men Who Ride Mountains, Men Who Ride Mountains.
Yeah, so it's been a long road to get into the event, and it's really exciting because now we're in, and so I feel like the past is the past, and it's time to move forward and just be excited to see women finally have the opportunity to compete here. And Surfing Mavericks is all about exploring what's possible. And we first saw that in 1975 when Jeff Clark paddled out there and didn't know if it was possible. And so I think the world's really going to enjoy watching women finally have the chance.
Well, I know you don't want to look too much in the rearview mirror, but it is fascinating. You and other women started surfing before and after the competitions to demonstrate that you could. What was the thinking? Were they being patriarchal and protectionist? Were they worried that women might get hurt? You know, just paddling out there is strenuous.
Yeah. You know, I'd say all of the above. And it was a long fight, and so along that way, we created the Committee for Equity in Women's Surfing, because in California, we have rights on the coastline, and the coastal doctrine provides equal access to the coastline. So if you close it down for a day, you are effectively excluding women. So we used that as leverage to get into the event.
Well, and you had people on your side, including Sabrina Brennan, who was part of a local government harbor commission and who had that reasoning. You can't exclude people from the coast. Talk about another thing that propelled you into this activist mode of, you know, organizing. This notion of female surfers as, you know, these beautiful skinny blondes that would pretty much sell boards and equipment, not the super athletes that you guys are.
Yeah, so that's been one of the really challenging battles that we women surfers have faced for a really long time in our sport. And it's so awesome now to have media coverage from stations like NPR or the New York Times, LA Times. All of these major mainstream media sources are giving us media coverage for our skill, and so I think it's awesome we're starting to see the tides change.
There was that 2017 documentary, It Ain't Pretty, showing that, as the BBC put it, surfers like yourself in these freezing waters, full wetsuits, hoods, bodies strong and muscular, faces raw from the cold, noses streaming with snot. I mean, you're out there.
It's cold. It's uncomfortable. It's dark and it's scary.
My worst wipeout was at Ocean Beach.
I almost died.
I knocked in my two front teeth.
There's like blood like all around me.
These girls are charging. There's consequences out there in big wave surf, and that story needs to be shared.
So talk about what it's like. These waves, 100 feet high. What do you do differently when it's a 100-foot wave?
I haven't caught a 100-foot wave ever,
okay.
So
when
I
it's
don't know.
60, what is the biggest?
I've gotten a 40-footer before.
Oh my God. So what do you do differently?
I mean, breath work is huge. Just being able to stay calm and focused and take action. It's like in any high-risk situation, you can either, you know, run and hide, or you can take action and fully commit. That I have like a bunch of little mantras, and one of my favorite ones is dedicate, don't hesitate.
Is it true that you practice holding your breath for 4 minutes?
Yes, it is true. And in fact, I bet you could do it too with the proper coaching. It's really amazing to actually explore that and use a professional diving coach, because the human body can learn how to do it in a day.
Wow. Well, and you need that. You know, what happened the first time you caught a really big wave?
Oh, God, the first time I caught a really big wave, I almost died. It was at Ocean Beach. I didn't even catch a wave, actually. I was with a friend. We didn't really know how big the waves get at Ocean Beach in San Francisco. We paddled out, made it out pretty easily, and then there was about a 15-foot wave just about to break in the worst possible spot, and I dove under it, and I was spinning every which way underwater, had no idea which way was up, opened my eyes, it was all black. Mm. And then my feet touched the ground, and I barely had enough energy to slowly swim to the top. I did like 2 or 3 strokes, and I thought right before I got to the surface, I just thought, you know, if there's another wave, I'm going to die. Mm. And I got to the surface. And luckily, there was not another wave, obviously, because I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And my whole body was convulsing. I was gasping for air. And once we got there on the sand, I just looked at those waves and I thought that I want to surf out there and I know I can do it, and that I have to start really working hard and putting in all the work that it takes. And I think it's really about psychological safety and just making yourself feel really comfortable in really uncomfortable situations.
Hmm. And what is it like when you catch it?
And then, so that's the fun part. It's like you're going 1,000,000 miles an hour and everything is kind of standing still at the same time. So it's really, really fast, but at the same time, it's really slow. And all your senses, everything is just heightened in. There's no other place you are except for right there in the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's what people often are seeking to experience through meditation.
Is it like an elevator drop?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, like it's like a roller coaster ride, and you're just mostly airdropping when it's that big, when it's 40 feet. And then you hope that right when you land on the surface of the water, you smoothly land and gain speed. But if you are just slightly off in your body positioning, you could catch a rail, and then you've got a mountain of water coming down on you, and you're going to get sent down really deep really quickly.
Well, and you've said that those wipeouts are actually positive. You make them positive.
Yeah, I mean, every failure is an opportunity to learn, and that goes for any sport or any business person, student, anything. You know, failure is the opportunity and how you learn to get to being the best you can be.
Well, also, you say it's like the power of the universe. It's like the awesomeness.
Yeah, that's what I most love about Mavericks. And in the very first time I went out there, I just thought it was so magical and so special, because you're sitting out there 1/2 mile off the shore, the water's freezing, and, you know, you're right near this major city, but for some reason it feels like you could be the only person in the world on the water out there, and just out of nowhere come these huge mountains of water, and when they show up, there's enough energy to light up all of San Francisco. So it's like this moment where you're just like, whoa, I didn't even know something like this existed. It's awesome. So yeah, I'm really excited for the women, all of us, to get to compete at Mavericks this year, and I hope everyone tunes in, because it's going to be amazing.
That's Bianca Valenti. She's one of the women who ride mountains. Bianca, best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
The window for officials okaying the Mavericks competition closes February 28th. We will be watching.